Welcome to this guest expert call with Susan Turnbull for the Money Matrix Magic Marathon. This is Katie Curtin, and I have to say to all of you that we have a lovely treat in store. Susan will be talking on the hidden belief story running your life, why the secret may not be working for you. And I'll be interviewing Susan for about 40 to 50 minutes, and then we'll be opening up for your questions. So before we go into the questions, I'd like to just tell you a little bit about Susan. Susan lives in the high desert of Albuquerque, New Mexico, which sounds gorgeous, and she has a very unique constellation of talents and life experience. She uses to help people release their belief systems. And she's created a proprietary belief assessment that uncovers some of these self-limiting beliefs and conflicting beliefs that people have, and is the most comprehensive tool in the business, in the industry, around this question. So if you ever have a chance to do it, it's quite the assessment. So Susan has devoted well over 25 years to all facets of sales, marketing, recruiting, training, and coaching, and won many national awards for her sales efforts. Along the way, she discovered her gift for inspiring and coaching others to success through helping them uncover hidden beliefs that have kept them stuck. Susan is a certified biokinesiology facilitator, an emotional energy specialist, a human design specialist, an author, a spiritual intuitive, and a transformational life coach. She hosts her own radio show, Breakthrough, on Blog Talk Radio through Authentic You Media Company. Each week, she and her guests talk about breaking through the most difficult, self-defeating beliefs. So I find Susan is just so brilliant and so articulate around the whole question of beliefs and why they're there and what to do about them. And I think you'll really benefit from her ability to explain what happens with belief systems, how they get encoded in us. And I think it will be very enlightening for all of you. So what I would like to do is just welcome Susan.
Thank you, Katie. I am very, very honored to be here tonight. I want to thank you so much for inviting me. I love any and every opportunity to assist other people in their journey. And I really want to thank you. I'm pretty excited about this evening. Thank you.
Me too. And something I neglected to say, but I really wanted to say, is that Susan has really gone through a huge amount of life experiences where she's dealt with not just the good, but also the very difficult experiences in life, and come through with incredible resilience. And she's one of these very warm, lovely people who's lived life and is living life to its fullest, despite whatever life throws her. So I wanted to add that. So to start off with, Susan, I'd love you to tell us a little bit about what led to your present work as a belief transformation coach and human design specialist.
Sure. In looking back in retrospect, I believe it started, this dates me, 25 plus years ago. I started with my first ever venture in a network marketing company. It was a European skincare company, and did very, very well right out of the chute. And I was traveling all over the country, opening up new markets for this product line, meeting fun, exciting women. And pretty early on in this process, I was discovering, as I traveled to an area, met with a contact, and I was training her from the outside looking in, here was this beautiful, vivacious, gorgeous, intelligent, wonderful woman who I was thrilled to have on board working with me in this company, and spent quite a lot of time in her area doing the training. She would take all the information in, and her enthusiasm for this had me totally, completely convinced that I was not going to have to spend too much time, because she could just take this and run with this product line in the area. I would get back home, and a month would go by, a couple of months would go by, and I would notice that there wasn't the production that I thought would be happening. And long story short, I think I began to notice something was there when I would hear excuses like, I'm going to be very facetious here, you know, I didn't get this done, or I haven't done this, the baby has a diaper rash and the dog is in heat. And like I said, I'm being facetious, but there were all of these excuses as to why this was not happening. And I remembered very clearly that this was something that I was questioning, because what I was observing on the outside was not matching what was happening with her on the inside. And I think that was my very first introduction to digging a little bit further into what this might be. And that pretty much started me on the road. I think where it really became prevalent in my life was when I became a coach. When I found out about the coaching industry, I remember driving to this seminar, and there was something about it that I already knew this was the next step. I hadn't even gotten to the seminar, listened to the information, but I just knew what I knew what I knew. And consequently, because I've been in sales and because I've been in training, because I've been in many areas, I was looking at the kind of coaching that I would be doing. And I was taking a class here in Albuquerque called Entrepreneur Power, where she kind of collected a mastermind group, and she became a mentor of mine, the woman who led the class, and she was working with me to try to disseminate the best path to take, the best route to go. While I was in the process of trying to figure out what area of coaching to go in, I had remembered a workshop that I had done while I was with this company. And it was a very, very powerful workshop. Each of the managers was asked to present a 30-minute whatever, and I had read this book that I thought was so cool called Giving Away Success. The response to that workshop was the women didn't want to stop talking about it, even though we had to keep on schedule. But in the back of my mind, I kind of filed that away and said, you know, I need to keep this information handy again, because I think I need to do this again. So I put this workshop out there, and I called it Giving It Away. And it, of course, is different for every person. Within 24 to 48 hours, I had over 150 phone calls from women ages 18 to 82 and every socioeconomic background that you can imagine, a retired legal secretary, a software engineer, a housewife, a college student. And it was, they all said the same thing. Susan, that's me. I give it away all the time. And whatever it was obviously different. Well, the facility I had to hold this in only held about 12 people at a time, and there were 150 participants. So I broke the workshop up to doing it three times a week for, I don't know, 6 weeks or so. And there are no accidents, because in the process of doing this workshop over and over and over again, and what came up from it, the process of belief started coming out of this, and it kind of grew out of this organically. It took on a life of its own. And from that point forward, I've just never looked back. I've just continued on that path.
Interesting. That's quite a workshop. I mean, a lot of coaches struggle to get 12 people in a workshop, let alone to get that many sign-ups. That was an
interesting
challenge.
Well, I have a lot of coaches around here asking, how did you do that? And bottom line is, I don't know. But, again, I don't believe in any accidents. I believe whatever had been set in motion was designed to be set in motion for the sole purpose of what came out of it. And what came out of it was the beginning, the very beginning of the belief work that I would end up doing that I'm still doing today.
Mm. And so maybe you can tell me a little bit about how have self-limiting beliefs held you back in your life and what you have done to release them before we go into other people.
Sure. Two areas, probably the same two areas that impact other people very profoundly. One is relationships, and the other was money. And in relationships, I had failed relationships. And again, interestingly enough, the way this was set up, I am a domestic violence thriver. I don't like the word survivor. I believe the word survivor continues to draw and attract that, the necessity for that energy. But I remembered I was in a very, very abusive marriage. Now, I looked at my upbringing. I'm intelligent enough to know that that's a cyclical thing. Never heard my dad raise his voice. Never struck my mother. There was not a domestic violence scenario in my upbringing. In fact, it was very Norman Rockwell type of upbringing, going to grandma and grandpa's house for Sunday dinner with 60 or 70 aunts, uncles, and cousins every other Sunday. So how did this happen? How did I become a woman that was involved in a domestic violence situation? And again, in retrospect, I think I was meant to discover this so that I could peel back all the layers and discover that there was something more than what we see with the naked eye. There's something about the energy of our beliefs that draw and attract experiences to us. And I had to go digging. I had to go searching. How did this happen to me? How did this experience happen to me when it was not what I grew up in? Consequently, as I uncovered this over the course of the years, I was meant to go through this. I mean, I was meant to look at every single aspect of a person's core issues so that I would be better equipped to uncover what their issues are and how to help them from point A to point B. So relationships being number one, and then, of course, money and the challenges I had with money around money. But those were very, very distinct belief systems that were handed to me. I mean, my very earliest memory was at age six and remembering there was a fishing pole down at a corner drugstore market I wanted. I got 10 cents allowance a week, and I saved up for it. It took me 10 weeks to do it. But my father, instead of being proud of me and he took me down there, I remember him saying, wow, I'm surprised she did this. Boy, money burns a hole in her pocket and her brother's. Now, her sister, on the other hand, will probably end up, you know, owning the first dime she ever earned. Looking back on that now, it's like, how do you know that? How does an adult know what a six-year-old is going to do? But it set a tone, a big tone in my upbringing by my parents and the message to me. And mother was a school teacher. Dad was in labor relations at the mine. So that's equated to, I think, human resources. And we were a middle-class family. But I remember the messages being given to me more by what they did rather than what they said. And that was the message I took from it was, because I'm a girl, because I'm a woman, I am inadequate and I am incompetent to be able to handle money. Don't know, it's just how I perceived it, which this is a good segue. A belief is nothing more than a thought. that you have attached emotion to and decided it is true. That's it. And when you decide that belief is true, it gets tucked away in the subconscious mind. We only have access to about 5% of our beliefs in our waking life, only about 5%. 95% of our entire experiences in our life are underneath the surface in our subconscious mind, and they're running on autopilot. Most of our beliefs, and this can be found in any information with psychologists and counselors and therapists, will tell you that pretty much your beliefs about you and the world around you are set in stone by about age 6 or 7. Then what we do is we start piling experiences on top of those beliefs. And after a while, by the time we're adults, certainly, they're totally buried out of our awareness. We're not even aware of what most of our beliefs are. But there's one other little aspect to beliefs that keep beliefs alive and the reason we can't see beyond the belief. There is something within our brain called the reticular activating system, RAS. It is the job of the reticular activating system to filter out everything except the evidence to that belief. So we get so bogged down in everyday life and being soccer moms and crabby bosses and I'm working this job, but I really want to be over here doing. We get so bogged down with life, we're not even aware that the experiences that are causing us grief and pain are cycling underneath in the subconscious mind. And they're creating the experiences that we keep having. And every person will have a pattern or two, no more than two, but one particular pattern that shows itself over and over and over again. And that pattern will remain, and that pattern is that belief system that is fully alive and at work in your life. And so until we stop and start examining our beliefs, it will continue to run. And like I said, pretty much on autopilot. But they have definitely held me back with relationships and held me back in the past with money.
And when you say that every person will show a pattern, and you call it also a story, what kind of stories are there that people show?
The stories are as varied as they are with individuals. I will share my story, and one of the most profound things, and I think the length of time it took me to get to this was necessary because it really, really helped me with the work that I do with others today. My own personal story was because of this belief that I was conscious of by my parents that I'd never be able to make it on my own. I'd always have to have a man to take care of me. And I lost my mom in 89, went through a divorce in 92, and then found out dad was terminally ill. And being the eldest of three and the one in the same city, I ended up taking care of dad till it was over. And that was almost a 2-year process. And when it was over, I was done in the area I was in and picked a spot on the map and ended up in New Mexico. And I would have friends say, well, do you know anyone there? No. Do you have friends there? No. Are you crazy? Probably. But there was something about that that I needed to do because I needed to prove to myself and move through those beliefs that I couldn't make it on my own. I had to throw myself out there into parts unknown and make it work for me. So I moved to New Mexico 97, 98. I was in Santa Fe for under a year and then moved to Albuquerque where I am now. Every single belief that I had was starting to rear its ugly head. And I will share with you, I was in utter mortal fear. I mean, we're talking fetal position. Oh, my God, what am I going to do? But here's a pattern that began showing up for me about that time. I would be clipping along okay. And now I have three daughters. The youngest one, 10 years younger than the older two. Excuse me. So the older two were out of high school, and I still have the younger one, which was in, I believe, fifth grade. And this pattern would show up where all of a sudden money would disappear, as in lost the job or money that was promised to me for this, that, or the other would dry up, and I remembered feeling very fearful. What am I going to do? I've got rent to pay. I've got a child to feed. What am I going to do? Well, it got to a point where I couldn't pay rent, so I'd have to move. But here's the bizarre thing. The money I needed to make the move, and it costs money to move. You need first and last month's rent. You need movers, would show up. So if the money would show up to make the move, why wouldn't it show up to stay put? I was very, very clear on this, that that was a distinct pattern. My best friend and I would sit there, look at each other, shake our heads and go, again? Now, mind you, I never asked for help. That was part of my insistence, that I be able to do this on my own. But what I did do was I would tell my story to anyone that would listen. And I mean, help would come out of the woodwork. Strangers wanting to help me. And I remembered hating that feeling because it was a mirror for, Susan, you're not doing it on your own. So here comes that belief again. It was during the process after I had a five-year relationship with a gentleman in New York, Long Island. He's a few years younger, but his kids were a lot younger, so it made sense to me to close the gap and go to New York. It lasted about a year. There were no regrets. But I came back to Albuquerque, and there was about a 6-month period of time where I was without a job. And I remember going on this, I call it a journaling odyssey. I mean, I was like a crazy lady, and I'm still an advocate of journaling. I don't do as much today. I still write things down. It's a very powerful process, but I mean, we're talking 2 hours, 3 hours, four. I think my longest day was 6, 7, 8 hours. I go in the kitchen and run my hand under cold water. I couldn't get it up and out enough. But here's what happened. In the process of journaling something about my ex, I wrote down the word expectation, and I can feel it and see it as if it were yesterday. I got physically ill, physically, by writing the word expectation, and all of a sudden, there was the breakthrough moment for me. There was the aha. And I just kept writing, and what had happened is somehow I created a belief of what people did if they loved you, and I had attached that to money. Now, where did it come from? How did it get there? It doesn't even matter. That was the belief. Because if I told my story and people came to help me, they must love me, right? Right. That was the belief. Well, something very interesting happened. And what happened was I literally, financially, went from zero to just under six figures in about 14 months' time.
Definitely.
So I obviously, by bringing the belief to the light of day and looking at it and viewing it, it popped through that pattern. It popped through the energy of that pattern. And when it did, I was able to tap into that flow of money. And that was huge for me. So that was my story. I mean, that was the story I built around money, was that one belief. And the reason I do what I do today, Katie, is because I've probably spent 15-plus years working on belief systems from the time, actually 20 maybe, if you go back to my days with the skincare company and looking at all that. And I believe it's because my destiny, or what I was put here to do, was to create something so that other people didn't have to go through the struggle, and certainly not in the length of time that it took me. But in order to get to where I am today, I had to filter through every aspect of belief, including my own.
Mm. And so what I'm wondering, Susan, that story is really, really interesting, and you've certainly been through so many life experiences that you really are able to see the different aspects of beliefs. And also, to, I think something that's important when you're clearing beliefs is to have lived some of the problems or some of the challenges that people have lived. Because if you haven't, it's very hard to understand or even see the patterns, I think, sometimes.
That's kind of how I've looked at it. It's like I've been through every aspect of it, not because I see myself as a victim, but how can I help all the different aspects of a client's life if I hadn't experienced it myself?
And so I have a question about what you think about the secret and the law of attraction, and why does it seem to work for some people and not for others?
I believe, as I was thinking about this, Katie, I believe the secret was probably the single most brilliant marketing tool for bringing all of us out of the closet. And I have to laugh at that because I was just talking the other day. I mean, and I don't know that I've specifically talked with you about how many years you've been in this evolutionary process, but I was looking at all of this when during the time that my dad was ill. I had a lot of time on my hands, and I was one of those, my daughters called it being in the woo-woo closet. I mean, there really was a day and a time that you didn't use words like vibration or frequency or the universe, because normal people would look at you like you had two heads. So we gathered together in small groups. There were those of us that knew 20, 30 years ago there was something very unique about being a spiritual being and having a human experience. And so I was aware of what the secret has been talking about 20 years before the secret came out. What the secret did was it woke up people by the millions. I mean, literally the millions. Now we could all come out of the closet, talk about it, and talk about the power of it. Now, the law of attraction. I have so many clients, Susan, the secret does not work. I put these thoughts down, and I write these thoughts down, and still, I still get these challenges, these problems. The thing of it is, Katie, is the secret works brilliantly. It is the law of attraction. It is an immutable law of the universe. It's been there since the earth was formed. It works the way it works, and it will always continue to work. Here is the secret to that. In fact, they call it the secret behind the secret. And I will use, and I know I've used this with you before, Katie, but for the listening audience, I'll use this analogy. Most of us know what a tuning fork is. It's this piece of metal that is calibrated to a particular note or sound. And so if you will just envision standing at the doorway with a tuning fork in your hand, and when you walk through this door, there are hundreds of tuning forks on both sides of this room. And they're like sitting up in these little vices so that the fork itself is sitting upwards and free to vibrate at will. So you take the one in your hand and you ping it on a table and you just walk down the center aisle. Every single tuning fork that is calibrated to the vibration of the one in your hand will start singing on its own. So when you have a belief that says, I am not worthy, you've just pinged your tuning fork. The vibration goes out and comes back to you in the form of an experience to match that which you believe. And I believe we were talking maybe a little bit later, why is it so important to uncover your belief? If you have a thought in your mind that you are a wealthy person, but you keep having financial crises that sap out your savings account, keeping you anything but wealthy, it's because there is a belief of some kind that is vibrating out there that will find its match, remember, through the reticular activating system, filtering out everything except matching the belief to bring it back to you in the form of an experience. So the law of attraction works exactly the way it was designed. It's just that people were led to believe, and it is true, you can create things in your mind, but the majority of us are creating our beliefs. That's what's at work here. And that's why it's so crucial to get that uncovered, to reveal that, to open that up, so that you can see what your hidden belief stories are, so you can see how powerful it is.
I love the way you explain that. It makes it really clear.
Yeah, I mean, you have an experience. There's a pattern there. That pattern is actually the response to the belief that's pinged that belief, that vibration. There is a frequency to that belief, and it's not necessarily what's in your conscious mind or that 5% in your conscious. It's what's running below the surface in the 95%. And I think we talked about the beliefs assessments. You, Katie, have seen them. You know how extensive they are.
Yes.
And that is because, and I've followed the work of many, many people who do beliefs work, but they all say the same thing. Okay, sit down and find out, write down all your beliefs about money. Now, if I were to ask most people that, they'd come up with maybe 5, 6. I mean, if you come up with 10 statements or beliefs that you have around money, that's pushing it, and you really have to think about it. But how many belief statements did you see on that assessment?
There were a lot. I was pretty exhausted by the time I did it.
Yeah, there were over 500.
500.
Now here, there are over 500 of them. Now here's what else is interesting. People that have issues with money, it's never about the money.
Yeah.
Ever. Ever, 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 ever. Now you might have had tapes playing from a mother that said you're not good with money or a father that said that, but the majority of people who have issues with money, it's never about money. The clients that have come to me, and this is just a couple of examples of how this works. One client came to me, she said, Susan, I don't know what it is. I don't want to be in corporate America, but I'm an ace. I'm at the top. I'm at the top of my game in corporate America, but I want to be an entrepreneur and I want to get into my spiritual work. And I'll really try to put these stories in a Reader's Digest version so we can move along here. Bottom line was, and this is part of your belief story and how it's attached to money, her story was that she never felt supported by her own family, by her mother and her twin sister. She never felt supported, so she had created beliefs around the people she worked with in corporate America. They became her family. So every time she tried to leave corporate America and start a business, she failed miserably because, again, she had to gravitate. The vibration of the story was your family that loves you and supports you over here in corporate America. Literally, by bringing that aha to the light of day, within a month, she had found someone to assist her in getting her program up and running, and to this day is doing the work that she loves to do. Another story, because I want to give you different aspects of this. This woman could create money only in a crisis. She said, I can draw and attract it, but it's always around a crisis. Long story short, as we're going through her assessments, I picked up that there was an issue with deserving. And I said to her, this woman was from France, and I said, why is it that you do not believe you deserve money other than in a crisis? Well, turns out as a little girl, her father spanked her a lot and hard. Now, in her mind, there was no reason. He sounded like a not-so-nice person that was rather abusive. But when he spanked her hard, and he would always say to her, to justify his anger, he would say, I'm doing this because you deserve it. So in her belief systems, the word deserving was always attached to pain. And as long as the word and the feeling and emotion of deserving was attached to pain, she absolutely had to keep it at bay. She could not bring that into her life. Now, mind you, this is all subconscious. And one other quick story, another client whose parents were immigrants, and she was a very, very, very little girl who was made to be responsible for a lot of very adult things. Call the utility companies, write this check, do all these things, and she was petrified because it scared her. This was big people stuff. So fast forward to her present day situation, why am I struggling to get clients and why are they not paying me? We go through the assessment, and I said to her, are you in fear of failure or fear of success? Oh, I am absolutely in fear of failure. I said, I don't think so. She said, really? I said, I think you're in fear of success. Bottom line, if you are a successful person, what do you have to be? You have to be responsible. The little girl in her was petrified to be responsible. She didn't want to be responsible, but she had forgotten that because it was a belief that she created many, many years ago. Once it came to the light of day, guess what? Immediately, 24 hours later, clients that she'd been trying to collect money from call her out of the blue, here's the flow of money again. So see, it's these stories that we get created when we're so young, and all of them affect your money life, but none of them have anything to do with money.
Mm. Yeah, I find that so true. And in fact, money is such a portal to other issues, some of the deepest issues of self-esteem.
Well, and that's because, Katie, mm-hmm. money is neutral. Take a dollar bill out of your purse, put it down on the table. It's a green piece of paper. Now, I'm going to ask a question of the audience, and I know I've asked you this. We talked about this in length. First time this question was asked of me, I about fell off my couch. I went, oh, my goodness. And that question is, if you were to put a gender to money, a gender, the gender energy, of, and attach it to money, would it be male or female? And I think
yes.
You and I both discussed this. I mean, for me, right off the bat, I'm a domestic violence thriver. I've had issues with men and power and control. Money was male, obviously. As long as money was male and as long as males had power and control over me, I had to keep that away from me. If I attached that energy to money, I absolutely had to keep money away as well. Now, there have been once or twice that the energy of money was female, but turns out it was a domineering or controlling mother or grandmother or something of that nature. But there will be an energy, there will be a gender there somewhere that a lot of people have attached to money, even though money should be neutral. Money is nothing more than the energy we assign to it. And we all assign energy to money. Money in and of itself is neutral. But we have assigned unconsciously, subconsciously, we've assigned an energy around it that keeps it at bay.
I find that so interesting. And as we've discussed before, I have the same thing as you. Money was definitely male, and it was powerful and patriarchal and domineering.
Why would I want that? Exactly. And for most of my clients, just that realization was enough to clear a huge, huge block, just that one realization. But, of course, there's a lot of other little aspects to it, and the best thing to do is to take a look, get down to the core beliefs. And there's only about 4, maybe 5, and that's stretching it, core beliefs. Victimization, abandonment, I think worthiness, deservedness are kind of in the same category. But when you get down to the very, strip everything away like an onion, the very, very, very bottom of it is that feeling that I am not enough.
Mm-hmm.
I am not enough. We spend the rest of our lives hiding from that, running from it, running into it, proving it. It's I am not enough.
And that is so prevalent. So prevalent.
Yes, it is. Yes, it absolutely is.
I work a lot with that, too.
Now,
I would like to...
very quickly, you had asked why it seems to work for some and not for others. There are some people... I know a guy who's 72 years old, and we all know a person like this has the Midas touch.
Yeah.
And so the same thing is applying in his life as it is in other people's lives. It's just that his beliefs were such that he did have the Midas touch. He never grew up in a scenario or a situation that played itself out other than success. But the same law applies, the same vibration and frequency applies to him as applies to everyone else. It's just that he happened to have the frequency of wealth and success. And I sit back and watch him in awe. I mean, he's still going at it, 72 years old and still going at it, but he's so laid back, and it's with ease. Put him in a sales group of people and take turns with this, that, and the other, and every single time, no matter where he is in that rotation, here comes a guy who says, okay, I'll take four of these and six of these. I mean, it's like, how does that happen time after time after time? Because he's vibrating to that. His tuning fork is pinged to success and wealth naturally. So the people that don't seem to struggle just had beliefs that didn't interfere with that. In other words, they learned how to get out of their own way and allow life to flow through them.
And I have a question here, is that sometimes I find certain interpretations of the law of attraction a bit harsh or maybe even inaccurate about an individual's responsibility. Because there are social and economic forces at work that encourage certain beliefs as well as influence the kind of life we can live. And, I mean, I always come down to the question, if you're molested or abused as a tiny child, how can you blame this on the individual if something they attracted? They were, you know, tiny and innocent. Or, for example, can you actually say that the Native people attracted the horrors of genocide or the blacks attracted slavery? So I'm just wondering how you reconcile all this this kind of more general stuff where people are victimized as a whole group and with the law of attraction.
And this is, and we discussed this before the call, this, I will touch base on this with what I know, what I've come to believe. And it's something that somebody can kind of chew on, think about, agree with, disagree with. But this is what I've come to know. First of all, talking about social and economic forces at work, that to me is very, very easy. Because there are, in times of a downturn that we've experienced the last few years, it's very, very easy. We can be a person who chooses to be soaking up the fear. I do not watch the news. I keep an eye on what's happening on world events, but I don't delve into the doom and gloom. There are certain news TV stations. I have people I know that are news junkies that get, there's the vibration of fear. There's the vibration of doom and gloom, and they're very easy prey for it. And so consequently, they're listening to the vibration of all is doomed, and they're living it. They're choosing to soak it in and living it. But Katie, you and I both know that there are also people that in a downturn economy become millionaires. And it's because their beliefs allow them the opportunity to see opportunities. They're choosing a different path. They're vibrating to a different path. and the downturn economy doesn't affect them at all. And if it affects them, it's because they become wealthier. So I society and culture, I think it's all about choice. It's what you choose to vibrate to. It's what you choose to think about. We talked about, you know, my experiences. I lost a daughter 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. And a year ago last December, I made a conscious choice. I mean, my world stopped. Everything stopped. And I became very numb. That doesn't bode very well for coaching when you can't feel. Mm-hmm. But a year ago last December, I got myself involved in Facebook again and started learning how to like and to share. And I'll tell you why I did it. Because as a coach, I know that no two thoughts can exist at the same time. Your mind and your thoughts cannot occupy more than one thought at the same time. So I had a choice. I could stay curled up in the fetal position and feeling numb and pain, or I could get myself on Facebook and join the rest of the world. And I started noticing people sharing all of these wonderful, enlightening, and inspiring posts. And what I noticed was at the end of the day, I started feeling uplifted. And the key word is I started feeling. And I started feeling hope, and I started feeling joy, and I started feeling things I had not felt in 2 years, 3 years. And I did it deliberately, and I was one of these that everyone points at and goes, oh, you're one of those Facebookers. You bet I was. Mm-hmm. Because I connected myself to the world from people all over the world, and I met beautiful people like you, and I met beautiful people there's 15 countries now that I'd never have to get a hotel room because I've got a beautiful soul sister somewhere that mm-hmm. has brought me back to life only because a conscious decision I made to find a way to input the good stuff rather than sit here and wallow in the painful stuff. That was a conscious choice. Now, as far as culturally, and again, this is a belief that I have. I believe that all of us come in with a contract. We don't remember this contract, but we all have somewhat of a destiny that we come in to fulfill. And we make choices before we even come in as that soul. And we choose our circumstances. We choose our parents. We choose our life experiences because those we have decided are the experiences that are going to allow us to evolve. Remember, our planet is in an evolutionary place. We are evolving. All of us, all 7 billion of us, we're evolving. So when you see things like this, I believe there are literally cultures that come in with these sacrifices that they make to awaken the world, to wake up the world, to push us, to literally catapult us to a whole new dimension of thinking. One thing that comes to mind is look at O.J. Simpson. And because I'm a domestic violence survivor, I think of this often. I mean, we've dealt with domestic violence from the beginning of time. Well, look what happened when that case happened. Why did that innocent woman have to die? Why did that young man have to die? I mean, it was tragic. It was horrible. But look what the energy of the case did for domestic violence in terms of changing laws. Look at the girl in Pakistan who was shot because she spoke up about education. Look at the girl in India that was horrifically gang raped. Mm. Look at the sacrifice her soul made, but look what's happening not only, look at as a nation, they're changing laws. Men and women alike are having sit-ins and walk-ins and stand-ins before their government and saying enough is enough. But look what happened on February 14th with that, a billion women speaking up. It's time to raise the frequency of the feminine energy on the planet. And it just happens through these experiences. If these experiences hadn't happened, how or why would we ever wake up to it or want it changed? Did that make sense?
Yeah. Well, it's a really interesting, I think, very deep thing that we just get.
It is. It really is a topic that needs to be dealt with in a series of workshops or understanding, but that's kind of the Reader's Digest version of it. I can look back on my life now, and you know I'm a domestic violence survivor. I've lost a child. You know that in the last few days I lost a stepdaughter. I've been there, done that. I've had many, many life experiences. But consequently, because I've had to go through them, how could I ever relate to someone I was helping that was in pain if I hadn't been through that? So I believe that I came into this life agreeing to all these. Now, trust me, there was a time that I wallowed in that victimization. That's my core issue. Oh, woe is me. Look what happened to me. It's just that through conscious choice, I have delved into anything and everything to do with holistic and alternative healing, and I've been studying energy psychology and energy medicine for 20 years. That's one of the reasons I'm here in Albuquerque. This is a mecca for that. But that's a conscious choice on my part. I remember my daughter coming home one day. It was after my dad died, and I went through a depression because there were a lot of family secrets that I uncovered on my father's deathbed. I mean, literally, bone-shattering, turning 40, and I don't even know who I am secrets, and I'm the one that finds out. So I'm in this depression. My daughter comes home, and she got angry with me one day. Now, as it turns out, she wasn't angry. She was scared. Here was the person she looks up to be strong and this, that, and the other, and I'm in a blubbering mess every day. And she said to me, she says, why don't you just go out and get a job and be a normal mom? Go to work. And first of all, financially, I didn't have to at the time, thank goodness. But I remembered looking at her and I said, you know what, love? Let me share something with you. The work that I'm doing now is the most important and the most difficult work I will ever do in my life, and that goes for you too. Now, she came back around years later as a young adult woman and just shook her head and said, Mom, I am so sorry. You are right. Can I get that in writing? Can I get that in writing? You are right. That's the most difficult work we'll ever do, is that inner work. But there's no way around it. First of all, beliefs are behind all lack and limitation, no exception, end of subject. That's it. Any lack and limitation in your life, there's a belief behind it, end of subject. And as far as the patterns that show up, the patterns in your life that show up will continue to do so until you learn what they're trying to tell you. And those patterns come from within you, from within those belief stories, those hidden belief stories, or the beliefs themselves. That's where they're coming from. When you get it, they don't need to come back anymore. Now they'll rear their ugly head from time to time, but it's nothing more than for you to look at it and go, I know what that is, and I'm not going to react to it like I did before. Only needs to happen once or twice, and then it doesn't need to show up again. Now you go on to the next thing. Because we're always evolving, and we're always learning, and we will continue to do so until we take our last breath.
Yes. You know, Susan, I think some of the things you say are so true, like that the beliefs are behind all the lack and limitation in one's life, and yet most of the time we act like that's not the case and look for it in many other places. Now, I just wanted, before I had a whole load of other questions to ask you, but given that the time's getting on, I would love to open up the floor first and see if any of the callers would like to ask you a question, and then maybe come back to those. So I'm just going to take it off mute. And yes, has anybody got a question for Susan yet? And if not, I'll keep going on, but I just thought I'd let you have the chance. Okay, well, while I'm waiting, and just to see if anybody else has a question, there's another question that I have, Susan, which is, you're also a human design specialist. How does that shape your coaching work and relate to people's self-limiting beliefs?
The human design system, there's been a very few times in my life when something resonated so powerfully that I knew I had to pursue it. The first one was biokinesiology, and that was over 15 years ago. And what I discovered was that was my first introduction to the energy of emotions. Mm-hmm. And it would become the foundation for everything that I would learn and do from that point forward. And there's not many things that have popped up enough and said, you have to absolutely do this, no matter what. The second one was becoming a coach and entering into the coaching industry. But about a year and a half ago, the human design system popped up. And it popped up, and it popped up. And I remembered every time I read about it, feeling that same feeling that I had with the other two things that I decided to take on in my life. And human design is a whole different type of a reading. I think I sent you your chart, didn't I, Katie?
You let me fill it out, and you looked at it, but you haven't told me what you've discovered.
Right,
yet.
We haven't got to that point, but I did send you your body graph.
That's right.
Okay. Well, the reason I love human design is because it is an additional tool that really, really helps me with my clients, and to the best of my ability will shorten this to kind of give you, again, an analogy. In the human design system, the 7 billion people on this planet fall into five categories, types we call them. There's the manifester, which is about 9 to 10% of the world's population. There's the manifesting generator, the generator, the projector, and the reflector. And every single one of us fall into one of those five categories. Now, within that type, there's a strategy for living your life. And many people discover when it's a tool, it's a personality tool. It's basically a snapshot of your waking, it's the DNA of your waking personality the moment you were born. But this is how it's become important to the work I do and how it's been helpful. And I'm going to use the example of a manifester. Most of our societies today tell us that we grow up, we get educated, and we go out in the world and we just charge the world and we just do it. And the world tells us that if we don't fulfill and follow through and finish what we start, that there's inherently something wrong with us. Well, in the human design system, a manifester is someone who has the ability to manifest whatever area of life they're working in. But they were never designed to finish. Never designed to finish. They were designed to draw and attract the manifesting generators and the generators, which comprise about 67% of the population. And they were designed to attract the projectors, which are the directors and managers of projects. But when I get a client that comes to me that feels pretty beat up by society because she's feeling or he's feeling flaky because they never finished a project they started, well, lo and behold, guess what? You're a manifester. You were never meant to. Now, how this works with belief systems, maybe they are a generator or another energy type. And if they are, we go into the belief systems to find out why they don't finish, why they don't complete the project. If they're a manifester, it's because that's what they're designed to do. The relief, I'm working with a girl in New York right now. She's a manifester. She spent the majority of her life beating herself up because she never finished projects. Society says, you're a flake. Now, she knows she has the ability to manifest her projects and then draw and attract the people she needs to complete and finish them. It has taken years off of her. She feels so much lighter. Her life is running so much more smoothly. So for me as a beliefs coach, it helps me understand, are we really dealing with a belief that is preventing that person from following through, or is this who they are designed to be? So using both tools, I'm better able to see if it is a belief or beliefs or a hidden belief story, and I can go to work to address that. If it's part of their human design, I can work with them on that and the strategy for living their design. So that's why I like that tool a lot.
And it's very interesting because you did tell me I was a manifester, and I have always struggled to finish projects. I have a lot of energy at the beginning, and at the same time, there's many I've finished a fair amount when there's a deadline, but if there's not,
and another aspect of the five energy types, there's only two. And you looked at your body graph, there's 9 energy centers. Now, the energy centers and the channels within that body graph are as unique as a snowflake imprint. So that's where we get into the individual parts of that design. So the two human design types that have sustainable energy, and that'll be that square in the center of the body graph that's defined. And I'm a generator, so I have sustainable energy. In fact, sometimes I have to find ways to let go of this energy. Manifestors, projectors, and reflectors have an undefined sacral, so they derive their energy, and do not confuse this with being an energy vampire. I had that brought up. Being in a crowd of people, you gain your energy because you take it from people that have it, just being in their space. But if you're working at home alone without any source to draw from and you keep pushing it, you will burn yourself out. Projectors, especially, and manifestors, by the time they're 40 years of age, if they don't find a way to use their human design type, they're the ones that end up with chronic fatigue syndrome. They're the ones that end up with fibromyalgia. They literally hit the wall. So it's learning how to work within your type and your strategy. Now, consequently, how does the human design system play into belief systems? The second energy center in a body graph is called the Ajna. When it is defined or colored in, the energy center Hello?
Yes, are you still there?
Hi, Katie. I'm just talking away here. Where did I drop off?
Oh, you just dropped off for one moment.
Am I back on the recording?
Yes.
Okay. So the Ajna Center, if it's defined, mine is defined. I came into this world with a set of beliefs that are defined, and they're there for all of my life. Now, my girlfriend, who has a defined Ajna, says, but Susan, I'm open to all beliefs. I said, yes, you are, as am I. But can anyone change your beliefs? And she said, no. Whereas a person with an open Ajna center is someone who struggles to identify their beliefs. They can actually walk into a room of people and absorb the energy of other people's belief systems. And consequently, talking about that vibration, and this reminds me of getting back growing up as a little girl, how did I learn to be a victim? There were a lot of stories that came up on my father's deathbed that explained to me more about my parents than I ever knew when they were alive. I grew up to be a victim because my father was, but not outwardly. I grew up in that vibration of his own fear. I remember growing up always feeling fearful and never knowing why. I literally was picking up the vibration of fear through osmosis.
Yes.
That frequency of fear never belonged to me to begin with. And so I work with clients in helping them to identify, especially if they have an open Ajna center where the beliefs are held, help them to identify what is yours and what doesn't even belong to you. I can't tell you how many clients we come through this belief assessment with. I look at their body graph. It's like, those never belonged to you. They were never yours. You're playing them out, but they were never yours to begin with. You, and this isn't done consciously, decided to own them. Instead of allowing the belief to pass through the energy center, more like a screen door, they absorbed it like a sponge and made it their own, and it was never theirs to own in the beginning.
Fascinating.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. I'm going to see if anybody would like to ask a question, and if not, we'll just continue talking and let it go.
Okay.
Anybody there like to ask a question? Now's your chance. I'll give you one minute or two more. Ah, often more. Okay. Well, I think seeing as there, people can always ask questions later on Facebook too. So
I'm going to give them my email address. If there's a question they want to ask in private, they can certainly ask that of me as well.
Oh, fantastic. So I'm going to go back to the questions that I have. We'll spend a little bit more time, but we could talk quite at length about some of these. But we'll just touch on them as we. I think we have maybe 5-10 more minutes for the call.
Okay.
So what I was wondering is that. You talked about your very comprehensive belief assessment, which you do with your clients. Why did you develop it, and what are some of the questions you ask to uncover beliefs?
Okay.
And maybe you covered a little bit of that already, but I just wanted to circle back.
I think it began back in that series of workshops that I was discovering that beliefs were a very big part of the angst that my workshop participants were going through. And I just started writing these statements down of something that someone might feel. I don't know how else to put it. And I started listening very closely, listening to everyone all day, every day. And I would just come home and jot a few of these statements down. And jotting a statement down would lend itself to another one and another one and another one. And I realized that by having these in front of a client, myself first, but by having them in front, you didn't need to go digging to something that was in the subconscious anyway. It made it easier for you by looking at this paper and reading the statement. You know if you resonate with it or not. So I took the struggle. That's why I did these assessments. I take the struggle out of trying to uncover what's really going on. Now, as I read them and look at them, I've been doing it for so many years, I can connect the dots.
Yeah.
But I do have the statement up in front of me, and this will be a really good example of going back to the tuning fork. It is wrong of me to focus on money the way I do. I would feel very guilty if I had a lot of money. Let's just take that one statement. I would feel guilty if I had a lot of money.
Yeah.
As long as that one statement is in place, there is no way that you can draw and attract a lot of money, because the fact that you already know you're going to feel guilty about it, you don't want to feel guilty about it. Guilt, blame, and shame are the three most toxic emotions that exist. I mean, on the top end of the spectrum, we have love, gratitude, and appreciation. On the bottom, we have guilt, blame, and shame. No one would like me if I appeared to have more money than they did. I worked with a man in the UK, in London, and his story was his father was a missionary, and as such, got him a scholarship at some kind of a uppity-up prep school. And he would look around at all the children around them that were behaving very entitled, and probably very snobby and looking down on him, and he started creating beliefs that money equated that kind of behavior, and he was a very nice man. He didn't want to ever be perceived as snobbish and entitled. Well, that program is running underneath the surface. And as long as he felt that money did that to a person, where did his money have to stay? It had to stay away from him because he equated money with appearing that way to other people. And that was just, so do you see the frequency of that? Let's see. Oh, a big one here. It is not spiritual to have a lot of money. Run into that with healers and coaches and people in the healing arts. We want to give everything away because that's what we do. I mean, if we ask to be paid for our services, that's certainly not a spiritual thing to do. Not realizing that by being a spiritual person and claiming our worth, that we are deserving of an equal exchange of energy, your money for my gifts and talents that help you, and the more that I do, the more I'm able to help others. See, lots and lots and lots on here about money, but here's another belief. I am afraid of change. Lots of money could mean lots of changes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid of life. I feel powerless. I feel helpless. I will never have financial peace. What has to happen as long as that feeling stays in place? Here's the tuning fork. I will never have financial peace. Ping it. And there it is vibrating out there. So consequently, what has to happen in your experiences is you will experience anything but financial peace. It'll always be financial chaos. So any one of these dozens of pages here, Katie, any one of these beliefs is enough to keep money at bay. Any one of them. And we have hundreds of them all creating that story. So it's a matter of being willing to look at, and I know most of my clients tell me after the fact that it really brings up a lot of stuff for them. I mean, they have to be willing to start doing some digging. And when you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, there it is. And most, a lot of people, unfortunately, get to that point where I've got to do something. I got a Facebook message from a gentleman in Australia the other day. He said, I cannot go on the way it's been going on. I've got to do something. I have to do something. So you get to that point, and you're ready to look. And no, and I think, Katie, you know this, because we've talked at length in private, the two of us.
Yeah.
The environment that I create is one of non-judgment,
mm-hmm.
and one that I hold the space that is safe for anything to come up. And stuff does come up, but that's what I create for my clients, is a place to hold the space that is loving and caring and non-judgmental, because that's the only way for me to be able to help a person get from point A to point B.
Yeah, and I think that's so, so important. And, because unless you have that space, then people cannot trust you to come and come to you with what seem to be the deepest secrets and sources of shame, which are keep holding them back in their life.
Right. And I just came across another belief statement here. I feel invisible to others. That is one statement.
Common.
That is one statement that I would immediately go to the human design chart, because there is a very distinct place in that chart where people feel invisible.
That's
and there's a method and a strategy for changing that or altering that. So that's how, once again, the human design chart assist me. If that belief was marked, the first thing I do is defer to the chart. And if it isn't there, then I start looking at what is running underneath the surface that had them feeling this way.
It's fascinating how you weave it all together. Now, I'm going to ask you something which is, I think, is very related to it, like why you think it's so important for people to focus their energy on their belief system and release their self-limiting beliefs. I mean, do you think they can't really do anything unless they do this?
Well, it goes back to the beliefs are behind lack and limitation, period. If there's any stumbling block, if there's any place where people are stuck, that's the number one thing when they come. Susan, I'm stuck. I just can't seem to get anything moving forward in the way I need to. There's beliefs behind that. Absolutely, without exception, end of subject, there's a belief program running behind that energy of being stuck. And that to me, yes, I'm a belief coach, but that's why I do this work. Because there isn't a human being out there that could not benefit from uncovering. And Katie, you and I read a lot of the information that's out there today. I mean, our planet is in a huge transition right now. Our world is in flux. There's a lot of the light and a lot of the dark, and it's all coming up to be healed. And everything that I've read and everything that's out there says it's time to grow. It's time to be who you were meant to be. And they all say the same thing. It's time to let go of your old beliefs and patterns.
Yeah.
And you can do it like I did. You can sit down and start journaling and do it one day at a time or do the work with someone who has taken all of that struggle out of the equation and allowed the process to be a lot quicker, faster, gentler, and certainly more joyful.
Yeah. And it can, I mean, it sounds almost, and because I think both you and me, we've had to go through a very long process to unravel our beliefs and are therefore working with other people. But we're able to work at a much faster pace with other people because we've seen it all and we're able to kind of see the issues quickly.
And Katie, you and I guide people all the time and we do it in sheer numbers. But every good coach I know still needs a coach. And I needed you the other night. You walked me through your energy work, through the energy work, and it was through that process with you. I mean, I came up with a couple of breakthrough moments myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, a good coach will always defer to other coaches. I'm not superhuman. No one is superhuman. But we are wise enough to know that when we reach a limiting point in our own evolutionary process, that's the time that we reach out to another person to get to the stuff that we ourselves can't get to.
Exactly. And that's so important because, I mean, I've gone to so many different coaches over time to figure out what is blocking me. And I've got a certain level with certain ones and others not at all. And the process goes on. And I know I've, through just consulting with you, just very small amount of times that I've had further insights on what keeps me stuck and where my next frontiers are. And
right.
I think it's a really important thing for people to do is just keep, because we have such a potential to expand and be ourselves, and we're being called on to do so much now that we keep going with letting go the beliefs and
We don't think twice about going to the doctor because we've got a pain that keeps surfacing, and we want to make sure it's nothing dangerous, and we don't think twice about it. But when it comes to our emotional pain, which, by the way, my belief is, and the work that I do, by the time it turns physical, it's an emotional aspect of your life that's been trying to get your attention. But we don't think anything about going to a doctor.
Mm-hmm.
But when it comes to the one area that can make the most difference in our life, and that's taking a look at what's going on inside, we want to ignore it, run from it, walk away from it. Let's certainly not deal with it. But again, that's where those patterns come up. Oh, you don't want to deal with it? Okay, watch me.
Yeah.
And I call it, I call it, you know, you get a whisper. Okay, I can ignore a whisper. Then you get a tap on the shoulder. It's a little bit louder. Then you get smacked up the side of the head with a 2x4. Okay, that's pretty loud. And then you still ignore it, and then the house falls on your head. And that's when people are like, okay, uncle, I cry uncle. I give. Yeah. I've got to do something. And why we wait to get to that part and that much pain in our lives, I don't know. But we do. And we've all done it. You've done it. I've done it. We've all done it. Yeah. All we're saying is that there are ways out there. Life was not meant to be a struggle. Life was meant to flow. These are just tools to unclog the pipes.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. And I think also, it's like, I think we're prepared to spend huge amounts of time on techniques and how to do this and how to do that, and yet somehow we feel that, you know, we should, you know, that we don't need to spend much time on beliefs and releasing them. And so I know at times I sort of thought, well, gee, I've done so much of this work. Why hasn't it, you know, why am I not at the place that I want to be? And
right.
Yet there's a lot of layers.
And that's the work that I do cuts down to the very bottom of the layers, where mm-hmm. when we do the techniques now and when we have access to all this wonderful energy work out there, it's that much more powerful now because we've cleared. We have had the breakthrough moments. We have the ahas. Those we've been able to clear from the bottom up. It's like I have a tool that gets to the very bottom. Instead of working from the top down, I go right to the bottom and I work from the very bottom out, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you mean in terms of you don't just deal with the superficial on top beliefs, but the ones that are behind it, the core ones.
There's no other way to do it. You've got to get to the core, and when you get to the core, then you can start unsticking the layers from the bottom up. And then you get, that way the things that are up there on top all of a sudden start making sense.
Yeah.
And for me, it takes a lot less time to just go right down to the core. If I have the ability to work with a client and go right to the core, which I do, it's much quicker, faster, and easier to go right to the core. Then we can start using the tools to teach them once they know what it is they're dealing with. Now there's tools. I call it spiritual integration. I was talking the other day with my producer, and she had a very, very profound insight. And she said, you know, the Wayne Dyers and the Deepak Chopras and all of them were very wonderful in our evolution. And we would get their books and their programs, and we'd go see them live on stage, and we were enthralled with what they were saying. It resonated with all of us. Then we got up out of our chairs or unplugged the CD or put the book down, and now we're back in our everyday life. And mm-hmm. to me, this process, I remembered asking a mentor a long time ago, I put this book down and I feel good and warm and fuzzy and happy and I want to be in this place. Now I walk outside the door and here's my life. And my life is chaos. And it's stuck and it's not pretty and it's yucky. How do I get back to that feeling that I had when I was reading the book or listening to the CD or whatever? And of course, that's been my journey. And so what people like you, Katie, and people like myself, Michelle called it, or she has a word for it, she calls it practical spirituality. I have another radio host friend who calls it practical magic. Mm-hmm. I call it spiritual integration. And we all realized we're all talking about the same thing. It's the tools that we give our clients to be able to go be the soccer mom, take your kids to practice, go to work, do a job. But the tools we've now handed them allow them to take a look at the day-to-day-to-day experiences, and instead of being caught up in that angst of, oh, here we go again, the tools allow the person to now go, ah, I know what that is, and they no longer need to react. They're more at peace. They've been able to shift. And in fact, the topic was brought up the other day, and Michelle and Janet and Cornelia and I are going to be doing a one-hour radio show on that very topic around spiritual integration, practical spirituality, the tools that we've all used that people can take with them out the door with the car keys in one hand, the cup of coffee in the other, and the kids scrambling to get buckled in the back seat on the way to school. The tools from that moment, from the moment they wake up, can be simply applied to where during the course of their day, they're taking these tools and they're evolving on their own. Because that's where we're at now. It's we've got to take it off the big stage and the books and the CDs, and we've got to teach everyone these practical tools for becoming more in the flow of life, for becoming more, having more inner peace, for experiencing more abundance, more prosperity, and more joy. And it can be done with very, very simple tools and techniques. My beliefs assessment is just one tool. I feel it's a very important one because it gets at the very bottom of it. But throughout the way, the other tools I have, the tools you have, and there's many of us out there that are now giving these tools to, what's the word I'm looking for, so that people can learn on their own on a day-to-day experience and go, wow, I see what's happening in my life right now. I'm in the present moment. I just saw that experience, but instead of blaming somebody for it, instead of being angry or guilty or whatever, internally they're calmly going, wow, I know what that was about. That was a mirror. And I see it clearly. And then, I mean, it happens in nanoseconds, but they go about their day much more in peace because they've been armed with the tool to identify what the experiences are all about.
And Susan, we have to wrap up now, but I'm wondering, well, first of all, is there any one small tool or tip that you could give to our listeners about something that can help them in their daily life?
There are a couple of them. One of them I call living in the present moment. I mean, how many times have you driven down the road, ended up at a stoplight 5 miles down the road, and didn't remember getting there? If you don't learn to be in the present moment, you can't identify the experiences and nip them in the bud. And I, for one, realized, I had a healer tell me when I was working with her, this was many, many years ago, and she looked at me and stopped me in mid-sentence and said, Susan, where are you? And I said, what do you mean? I'm sitting here in the chair, I'm talking. She said, no. You are not in the present. You are not present. What I realized, and I also realized through my biokinesiology training, because of a horrible experience that happened to me as a little girl from about age 5 to about 12, as a little girl, I made up my mind that if being in the present moment was that horrific, then I would never be in the present moment again. So I spent the rest of my young adult and then midlife adult life living in the future or in the past. I mean, I'm physically there, but mentally and emotionally, I wasn't. And so the very first thing I do with my clients is give them an exercise. And many find it hard to do, but like anything, it's practice. And that is when you get up in the morning, and sometimes you have to put a reminder there. I put index cards all over my place, but I live by myself with my daughter, so it didn't matter, to remind myself. So I'd get out of bed in the morning, and I'd literally say to my mind, I'm putting my feet on the floor. I'm walking into the bathroom. I'm putting toothpaste on the toothbrush. Now, it sounds like it takes a long time. We're talking nanoseconds. I'm turning on the hot water of the shower. I'm balancing out with the cold water. okay, I've taken a shower, I'm downstairs, I'm picking up my car keys, I'm getting in the car. Okay, I'm on Washington and Central. I'm looking to the right. There's a crossing guard there and a little girl in a pink dress. You literally look at your surroundings. You keep yourself right where you are. You do not take your mind back to, okay, my boss yelled at me yesterday, or what am I going to fix for dinner, or how am I going to pay the bill at the end of the month? You keep yourself in the present moment.
Yeah.
I've had people tell me they could only do it at 10-minute intervals or 15-minute, but like anything, it ends up being something you practice at until you get to the point where most every moment is a present moment situation. That way, when an experience pops up for you, if you're truly in the present moment, you can look at the experience not as something that was done to you, but something that was created for your growth. Look at that experience, make a mental note of it, change the way you react to it. See, most of us spend our lives reacting to life. Being in the present moment allows you to create the life you want, but it can only be done in the present. It can't be done in the past. It can't be done in the future. The only way to change is in the now. And if you're not in the present, you're not observing what's going on around you.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Excellent. Well, Susan, this has been just fascinating. And as people can see when they listen to the call or who are on the call right now, there's a whole load more there. We're just touching the surface in terms of the knowledge of Susan of beliefs and self-limiting beliefs and how they impact you. And it's just been fascinating to talk to you, Susan, and thank you so much for coming and talking to us. And I just wanted to ask you one final question, is that how can people find out more about your work and contact you?
Okay, and obviously anyone listening to this now or recording in the future can always get to me through you, Katie.
Yes.
My poor web designer had a computer crash a couple of weeks ago, corrupted some files on my website, and instead of freaking out, knowing this call was coming up, my thought about this is there is something that needs to be on the website that wouldn't be there if it hadn't happened. So I'm not freaking out, but I'm going to give my email address, because anyone can contact me through this email address and or my phone number, which I will also give, and or through you. And if they want to write me at ST, for Susan Turnbull, ST Beliefs, BELIEFS, coaching at yahoo.com. I have a special for listeners. If they say, Susan, I heard the recording, I understand you have a special on the belief session, I will give them a special rate on the belief session. If they want a free human design chart pulled, they can email me. I'll give them what they need to get a chart sent to them, and I'll give them a discount on a human design session as well. And that I will do for all of your listeners. Katie, they just need to mention that they heard it through this recording on your program.
My phone number,
505-350-5116. So that's 505-350-5116. And I hope and pray my website is up and running within a week or so. But anyone can contact me through the email address and know that I will see it.
Yes, and you do also if people are on Facebook.
Yes. Also, I'll invite the listeners. I have a radio show every Tuesday afternoon, 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern. It's called Breakthrough. My debut show was last week. I have a show tomorrow around the human design system. The following week, I have a wonderful woman from Canada who's going to be talking around the beliefs that surround a very important topic, the beliefs that surround dating violence. And Amy is an ambassador in Canada for working with young girls and their body images. Mm. And it's going to be a really good call. But it's called Breakthrough. You can go to www.AuthenticYouMedia.com. You'll see Michelle Arbeau's picture there. She's the producer and the owner. And then click on radio shows. If you scroll down to the bottom, you'll see the banner, the radio banner for my show called Breakthrough. And I love this Blog Talk Radio because you can go back and listen to the archives of all of the shows, and there's some other pretty incredible radio hosts on, under Michelle's umbrella as well. And they're fascinating topics, and we'll just invite your listeners to my radio show on Tuesday afternoons.
Yeah, definitely. Well worth listening to. So, well, thank you so much, Susan, for coming on this call and enriching us with your knowledge about belief systems and also the fascinating things you told us about the human design system. So thank you.
Well, I know there was a lot of information, but if the listeners take or find one thing that will inspire them to take the next step in their evolution, then I've done my job. Just that one thing. That's all they need to do to inspire them to take that next step.
Well, thank you. And I'm sure they found at least one thing. Each time I listen to you, I find quite a few things. So thank you, everybody also who's come and listened on the show and to the ones who will be listening later. Because a lot of you have other appointments or work and are listening to the calls later. And so, everybody, I wish you a good evening, well, depending on the time of you are in the world. And thank you once again for coming.
Thank you, Katie.